It takes courage to step out from the norm, to journey on the road less traveled. On our show, we're going to be talking with people who are living their true purpose and in the process uncovering the courage it takes from thinking about doing something to actually fully doing it. My name is Sherry Ruskus, and this is the Courage to Be the Difference podcast.
So what I find so inspiring about your journey is how you pushed through your fears and not only landed on your feet, but you're now spending your time inspiring other women entrepreneurs, which is a passion that you and I both deeply share. And I would love first out of the gate here this morning for you to share with our listeners the inspiration for your book. And in other words, when did you know that this book had to be written?
Oh, gosh. Well, when I was 6 years old, my mother said I locked myself in my room and told her to leave my dinner at the door that I was writing a book. So I think I went to school for creative writing, and before I started the tea company, you know, my dream was to write. And it was, it was one of those things where I was told, well, you can't really make money as a writer. You know, I had a lot of beliefs around it. And then before I had my son Sage, I wrote a book about my gypsy grandmother and her journey from the Ukraine, where they escaped Stalin, into Germany, where they were told that, you know, Hitler had jobs and was better to the gypsies. And obviously that was not true. And so I wrote a book about her journey, and it was really difficult to write, as you can imagine, when you're writing about atrocities and, crimes against humanity. So I was like, you know, maybe this writing thing isn't for me. So I finished the book, found out I was pregnant with Sage. And then in the 9 months, you know, pregnancy, I started, you know, writing poetry, and I thought, maybe I'll start a magazine, maybe I'll help other writers. So I always had a writing love, and I had worked with an editor who used to be at Scribner. His name was Tom Jenks, and I'd sent him my book, and he said, you know, there's one thing that I really love about this book. It's the fact that you are, you know, really working hard in it to seek the truth. And the truth of all of these, you know, experiences. And I thought, you know, yeah, writing is a chance to go in deep and look for the truth within, you know, yourself or within the world or history or another person. So I think I carried that forth when I had Sage and I found out he had, you know, he was going to die potentially from this birth defect. I had to hustle and figure out how to make money to support us. He had special needs. And so I started the tea company because I'd always studied herbal medicine. It was kind of my day job, if you will, aromatherapy. And I had a big vision that I could tie my gypsy heritage in with tea and create a new kind of tea company. And then what happened from there was 13, 14 years of business and getting my creds in the business world. And then when the tea company hired a CEO so that I could step back and, you know, balance out my life again, which I had a new baby and all of that, I thought, you know, it's time. I'm gonna write a book about this story, you know, and it's a lot less depressing than the story of my grandmother, which someday I promised her that I would write it, and I will rewrite that book. But, you know, I just thought, there's so many women out here in the world wanting to create a life where they can have their kids, they can have their careers, they can have balance, they can have their spirituality, they can have their marriages, they can have, you know, this life. What did I learn that I can give them and help them have it all? And that was kind of the inspiration of the book. And I thought, you know, what are the chief, like the biggest lessons I learned that I can share that could speed up their journey and get them to success quicker. And so I simmered those down and I got them into one book, and it's now going to be the first book in a series of three. So there's a lot in there, but you know, I've always dreamt of being a writer, and this journey of becoming one has been truly an adventure. And I know that a lot of women have a story in them to write, and I definitely want to help inspire them to not only have businesses, but to follow their dreams as writers as well now.
Beautiful.
It's a long answer. Sorry.
But it's a great one, and it's a great reminder of, you know, that we are each creating our story every day. When we get up and open our eyes and put our feet on the floor, we are creating the story of our life, and it's a great reminder of that.
Yeah, perspective is everything.
One of the things that I saw weaved in your story, and especially in the early days, is how you had to push your pride to the side and ask for help, starting with even your neighbor, who you barely knew, that, you know, you needed just the basics. And I would love for you to share a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think asking for help and then actually receiving it is one of the biggest challenges that women face in, you know, getting to the level of success that they have in their hearts. And I really had, I grew up, if you read the book, so you know about my dad. And I grew up basically thinking that, you know, to need someone is to be weak. To need help is to be reaching for a handout. You know, to be needy was bad, because I had two arms and two legs and two eyes and a brain, and I could go into the world and make something of myself. So to be in that position where I couldn't go out and get a job because I had a baby with special needs, and I couldn't, you know, my relationship with Sage's father was null and void, and there was no financial help there. And, you know, Gloria Steinem has this great quote that most women are one man away from welfare, and that was me. And I was in the position where I really did not have the resources outside of me to get through the situation. And so I had to go within and tap those resources. And those resources are a lot more humble. They are, you know, the ability to ask, the ability to accept fellowship, the ability to be vulnerable and open your heart and to say, you know, I don't have the answers. I do need help. You know, will you help me? And it really struck me that day when I got home from the hospital and there was no food and I was starving. You know, once the shock wore off and I realized just how hungry I was, physically hungry, you know, to ask someone for food is really, you know, it could be embarrassing, but, you know, it was no longer about me. It was about my baby. And I'm so grateful for Sage coming into my life and choosing me as his mother so that I could, you know, get outside of my ego, get outside of my belief system that my dad and my family, you know, had instilled in me. And, you know, learning to ask for help to this day is the most valuable thing I can ever offer anyone, because to ask for help and actually receive it is to, you know, be very vulnerable, but also to be very authentic and very real. And I, to this day, I ask for help when I need it. And this book is actually a testament to it, because I was writing and writing for 2 or 3 years, and it was so long. I mean, it was hundreds of thousands of words, and I couldn't figure out, you know, what the most important nuggets were for my reader. And I just was having a hard time. I picked up the phone and called Deb Norton, who's a writing coach, and I said, Deb, I'm never going to get this book done. I really need your help. And, you know, that was a turning point. I worked with her on the book. She helped me figure out what the most important pieces were. She helped me get 10,000-word chapters down to 1,500 words. I mean, it was excruciating, but fabulous. And that was another moment where, had I not thought, okay, you know, pride can't feed a baby and pride cannot get this book written, I better ask for help. And that, so I use it to this day, and it's a very valuable lesson in the book that I think readers will really enjoy.
I love that. Pride can't feed the baby. Yeah, it surely can't. And when you went in the date, I laughed out loud the whole story around going in to ask the cafe owner to buy the business.
With no money, yeah.
With no money, your beat up car. baby vomit on your butt.
that was pretty much my whole life at that point.
But you pushed through. And what do you think it was that just said, do it, do it? I mean, and your whole conversation that you had with the, with your inner critic,
Whether or not people are religious, I mean, I have a really enormous faith in God. And I, you know, that saying, dog, you know, God is, I'm looking at my dog right now. I almost said dog. God is my pilot. Like, I literally, when I don't know what to do next or in general, you know, not only do I make a cup of tea to get myself into the mindfulness and the ritual of actually nurturing myself with something, but I will say, God, show me how to serve. How can I serve? God, show me how to serve. Please help me uplift myself and people. Please help me, you know, and I honestly, that is the secret to my life. And I am in constant service to the divine. And that is a really, you know, there's no other way. When I was little, I went to this really amazing private Christian school, and I really, you know, I was the fat kid. I had buck teeth and frizzy hair, and I dressed like Cyndi Lauper, and I told big stories, and I was the biggest outcast on the planet. I mean, people just thought, I got made fun of. No one picked me for their teams. But, you know, it was the best thing because it turned me inward and really helped me create a relationship with God. And I do believe that the divine has the reins and that miracles happen when you're in tune with that. And when miracles aren't happening, then you know you've got to tap into the divine. And I truly believe that that day, that courage, that voice that said, just do it, I don't know if time to talk to me, but I will tell you there was something, it was beyond me. And it was, you know, my greater spirit within, it was my greater resources, I was tapped into something different. And I spend a lot of time being tapped into that these days, more now that I'm not, you know, I'm not running the tea company anymore, and I'm actually, you know, meditating a lot more and praying a lot more. But I really do believe that courage is tender, and courage is vulnerable, and courage comes from, you know, the universal goodness that is in the world.
And what would you share with our listeners who are having a hard time listening? That are so consumed with fear, because there are times when we're in the depth and the breadth of our small business that we just get so consumed by that fear of failure that we.
Sherry, I still have it. I have that still. That doesn't go away. Like, you don't all of a sudden hit the $1 million mark and your fears go away. They actually carry bigger sticks. The more the higher the stakes, the bigger the stick, you know, and your fear will, you know, it will work really hard to keep you safe. So right. The thing about fear is your ego. Well, this is my belief, but fear is your ego really trying to keep you small, to keep you safe, because your ego doesn't know the power you have within your heart and your mind. The ego is like, kind of like, the ignorant aunt, maybe that's like out in the country doesn't have the internet that tells you that, you know, college or business or something, oh, that's scary, don't do that. You know, we all have those people in our life that, you know, embody the fear. And so I think if we can look at the fear and say, fear, I see you, I hear you, I validate you, and, you know, I'm moving through you, I'm moving on. Because fear has to be walked through every single day, but it's only through mastering a meditation practice, a spiritual, you know, belief system. It's only through guiding fear with a stronger mind and heart that you can get through it. And that's what I found, my meditation practice, my ability to be quiet and be still, to make that cup of tea and say my gratitude prayer. That is how I get through fear. And I'll tell you, Sherry, you know, launching Xena TV this week, you know, it's a soft launch. We launched it 2 nights ago, and I was terrified of you know, people hating it. Terrified of, it's not me. I'm not terrified of things, but the fear in me, the ego in me is so scared that I'll be rejected still. Or so scared that the money won't, you know, somehow figure itself out and flow toward me. So scared of so much that, you know, I just want your listeners to understand that fear doesn't go away. You have to befriend it. And you have to actually see what it's trying to teach you. And then, like that sweet aunt, you know, the sweet ignorant aunt out in the country that is scared, you tap her on the hand and you say, it's going to be okay, I got this one.
Yeah, thanks, but I got to go.
And it is, and, you know, I would suggest to the listeners who are stressed out about the business, you are in business for a reason. You chose this. It chose you. There is there's a saying in the Book of Miracles. Wait, I'm blanking on the name right now. That a friend of mine told me, and it's nothing that is real can be threatened. So moving past the fear and into the truth is what needs to be focused on. And that is, you know, when you feel the fear come up, you know, I have all these exercises in the book. I wish it was out. But when you feel the fear, you basically call, just insightfully say, that's fear, and move on. Don't fixate on it, because the fixation then builds the reality. That which you pay attention to grows. So if you're paying attention to the fear and not to the forward motion, then it's going to grow.
So how do you not? Okay, because I'm hearing our listeners going, but how?
Well, you have to get a hold of your mind. You have to tame the mind. And I do Vipassana meditation, and I teach a really light version of it in chapter one in my book. But Vipassana meditation is how Buddha became enlightened. And the simplistic way to look at it is you must have silence. You must go within and learn to tame the mind, because the mind is a wild elephant, and if you don't tame it, it will trample you. So whenever you're going nuts, you know, ask yourself, do I need a meditation practice so that I can tame my mind? Sherry, every successful person I know in the world meditates, has a practice, and that practice, you know, is every day, whether it's 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Sometimes I don't have time. I do 11 minutes. I set my timer on my iPhone. I sit still. I repeat a mantra to mellow out my mind. I call it throwing the mind a bone. And I sit and I focus on my breath. I breathe into the belly, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. And I will say a positive affirmation or a gratitude prayer or something to calm the mind. Because, you know, it's like the mind, it's not only a wild elephant in the force it has to trample your life and your dreams, but it's actually like an untrained puppy. So we spend all this time going into business trainings, going to business school, reading business books, but how often do we actually go into mindfulness, going into training our mind to actually be able to focus, to overcome fear and doubt? That is what meditation does. And I tell all of my clients that I coach or consult with, you know, if you don't have a meditation practice, you may get to success, but you're not going to enjoy it as much, because there's a lack of spaciousness. There's a lack of, you know, control. You know, controlling our minds is the one thing we can do with zero money and every day that can actually get us to a place of success more quickly than any business book could ever get us there. This is not tactical. This is practical. This is something that is in our soul. It's in our DNA. It's a must. And, I mean, Buddha, I mean, everybody, all the great spiritual leaders have said, you know, silence and know thyself. Be silent. Go within. You know, find the calm. End suffering within yourself. That has to come from a daily practice.
I absolutely love it, and I think it's such fantastic words of wisdom, because we just get that monkey mind that just starts going crazy, and it's running our business instead of the true essence of who we are.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, meditation can get you into your heart, and your heart is like where so much of the truth is, and fear doesn't live in the heart. Fear lives in the brain. So, I mean, if your brain is going, you know, awry, the little monkey mind, you know, have compassion. And, you know, a friend of mine in one of my meditation classes said, you know, think of your mind as, you know, when it wanders as you meditate, put it back in the box. It's a kitten that just escaped the box, and gently put it back and just keep focusing. And from there, you know, people become way more powerful when their minds are focused, because the mind is the most powerful thing you've got.
Absolutely. And you mentioned a meditation class, so you've actually taken classes.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You have to have a teacher. So I do Vipassana meditation. It's insight meditation. And I also do Metta, which is loving kindness meditation. That's a good one. If you're frustrated with somebody, you beam loving kindness at them, which isn't always easy. And if you do it for 30 days straight, I know sometimes I'll get to like day 29 and be like, I just can't do it anymore. I'm not done carrying this resentment. but yeah, I've taken 10-day silent meditation sets up in the Sierras through the California Vipassana Center, and they're free and they're remarkable. And but if you can't get away for 10 days, you can do 3-day or 5-day. We have a great place in LA called Insight LA, and they have great meditation teachers like Sharon Salzberg will come. And so, yeah, definitely, like, signing up for a meditation class is great because it helps you, you know, actually learn from somebody. But also, you know, having a meditation group, and I'm very lucky where I live that we have a lot of them. But my husband and I both meditate, and he's got a meditation room in his office on the property, and I've got a yurt that I go meditate in. And sometimes when the kids are going crazy and there's just no way to go down to the yurt and get my meditation groove on, I will wake up and sit in bed and do it. And and if I don't do it for a couple days in a row, I definitely start to notice. I start to notice the worry come back, the anxiety come back. I mean, it is basically a lifeline to calm.
So it's a lifelong practice. It's not just something for
quick
fix.
You fall off the wagon, you climb back on the wagon. Fall off the wagon, climb back on the wagon. I mean, at least that's my... I do not profess to know the answers to life, but I know that's what's worked for me in my, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurial people have, you know, ADD, and
absolutely.
I am one of them. And yep. I jump from thing to thing to thing to thing. And then, you know, I'll be writing, you know, a chapter or something, and my daughter will need me, and the puppy will have chewed up her favorite toy. And then my son, who's a teenager, will, you know, oh, God, Mom, I need help on my homework. And then my husband's like, oh, babe, what's for dinner? And then I'm just like, ah! And so, like, you know, this is it. Like, this is the way it is. And so with all these things coming at us, we have to have at least a little, even if it's 7 minutes using your digital timer to breathe and meditate and focus on mindfulness on a cup of tea and notice your senses again, just coming back into the body, coming back in and having that moment of zen is a really important tool that women can carry forth so that they can do it all.
Well, and it's one of the messages I love in your book. It's those snippets of time. It's the time that you sit there and have that cup of tea, that give yourself that time. Why wouldn't you? Because we as women tend to not do that. Like we'll you know, chug the tea as we're on our way to somewhere.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, it breaks my heart, Sherry, and I find myself doing it. Like yesterday, I had all these meetings, and I threw my tea in a to-go container. I didn't meditate. And I was on the road, and it was just like, you know, my day was just a little off. It did not feel like I was open to the gifts of the universe. And that's really what it is. Everything we want in life, we can have. It's a matter of noticing, you know, like Gay and Katie Hendricks talk about, you know, there's an opening in so many moments that we can't see because we're, you know, preoccupied with a worry or with stress or with something else. And that ritual of brewing yourself a cup of tea, of bringing it to your lips, of drinking it and letting the hot liquid, you know, nourish your chest area and then down into your stomach, that is powerful. And women, you know, we often think it's selfish to care for ourselves. And I know it's cliche to say that because a lot of people are talking about self-care, self-care. But until we do give ourselves that self-care, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult to have it all and love it all, you know, and to know we have when we have it all because we have it all right now. We just aren't looking at it.
Beautiful. Start where you are is the lesson learned in the fourth chapter, the fourth cup of tea. And it's really such an inspirational message for those that are waiting for that perfect moment to start a business. And you, in it, you ask the question, what is your unique form of genius and how can you start making it more evident in the world today? And I would love to have you speak more about that.
Yeah, well, I think I used the example. There was this woman I knew back in the early days of the tea company, and she so badly wanted to open this tea room or a tea spa, and she had every single resource. She had a wealthy husband.
Which is what great resource to have.
You know, and she was a model. She was a former model, so she had legs and just gorgeousness. And, I mean, I'm this short, you know, short girl with zero money and you know, single mom, and she had a full-time nanny, and, you know, she dressed so beautifully, and she had hired all these consultants to help her write a business plan. And I just was like... And she came to me, you know, to design some of the teas for her future spa. And I just remember looking at her and thinking, oh, my God, you have it all. Why haven't you started? But in her mind, she had – it was never ready. It was never perfect enough. It was never good enough. It was never – and I thought, holy cow, you know, I had $6 when I started. Like, and like, what? Like, I could not – but she just couldn't see it. And so I thought, you know, no matter where we are in life, there's always this fear of starting, you know, of committing, of getting it done. And I thought, what is that? You know, if we just say, okay, I want to start a business, I have new resources, but I'm starting today. Like, there's so much power in that. It's like, you know, you put your stake in the ground, and then all of a sudden it's evidence. And evidence builds upon evidence. So... You know, in the beginning, I would say, I'm starting a tea company. I had no idea how or what or where or how it was going to happen. All I knew is that I had a vision in my head, in you know, from a moment of desperation, and it was Gypsy Tea. I knew nothing beyond that. And I just started saying it. The whole, you know, I don't say fake it till you make it. I say it till you make it. Because when you start saying that you're doing something, the word is so powerful. It alone is a stake in the ground. It alone can help you, you know, manifest your dream. And now we all know about, you know, the awesome vision board process of building a vision board so you can see your dream happening. And I have a vision board for the book that my designer created that's so remarkable. And I use a vision board all the time. I make vision boards for vacations. I use them all the time because I know the power of you know, just starting where you are. Even though you're not where you want to be, as soon as you start building evidence in the world of your commitment, all sorts of miracles happen. People came out of the woodwork to help me. I couldn't believe it. You know, I had a woman who came to the first Gypsy Tea Party who said, honey, you need money. And she took me around and introduced me to investors. And I didn't know how to talk to investors, but my commitment to tea and making tea and making a company was so evident that investors started asking how much I needed. Did I need some money? Do I need help? Do I need, you know, administrative help? Blah, blah, blah. It was my commitment that spoke. And that is what every single woman or dreamer or entrepreneur or mom who wants to start a business, everyone can start that there. It's accessible to 100% of people 100% of the time. And you don't need any money. You can. All you need is your word and your commitment, and the rest follows. But you have to be unwavering in your commitment. I was the joke was with my friends. No one, I mean, no one wanted to hang out with me anymore because they would say all roads lead to Gypsy Tea. I'd invite them over for a drink, and they'd be stuffing Gypsy Tea samples. I mean,
you do at a point you have to breathe, live and breathe it, right? I mean, I feel that when you're nurturing a business, you have to.
Absolutely, there is no. It is. It needs your life force to be born. And that's really, you know, like anything, you know, if you get a puppy and ignore it, it's never going to get trained or fed. If you want to start a business, but you only give it 5 minutes every week, it needs your nurturing. It needs your focus because once again, you have the power to make it real. And I think a lot of us get scared of that power and avoid it. And I believe that we as women, you know, as soon as we say, okay, we can do this, we can own it, we can shape it, we can create it, we can form it, that is where the world will change. That is where our world will change. And you don't have to be, you know, in a corporation to do it. You can be an at-home mom with a great idea.
You talk also about plucking the positive. And does that apply in the same way, in that whole positive piece of keeping positive, staying positive, plucking the positive?
Well, you know the book Think and Grow Rich, it's the classic.
Sure. Yep.
Well, it was written by a man 100 years ago. And, you know, bless his heart, Napoleon Hill, amazing. But he was studying the titans of industry. And he always talked about you have to have a positive mental attitude. Well, I personally had a hard time. You know, I tend to run a little more like, oh, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, I have my dad in me. You know, the one that, you know, I mean, his family survived concentration camps. I mean, he did the best he could to be positive, but it was always like, well, you know, when they do it, I'll believe it kind of thing. And I really learned that the women in the tea fields, they are my soul sisters. I am their voice. I believe so deeply that I was put on earth to help them. And one thing that I noticed and that I understand from the tea workers is that they have to very quickly pluck only the best top leaf and bud, two leaves and bud. And they do it with such breakneck speed, you cannot believe it. And if you focus on the coarse leaves underneath, you'll get a rough plucking and a gross cup of tea, basically. So it takes work, practice, and discipline to pluck the positive, the top two leaves and the bud in your life. But you have to force yourself, you have to create a discipline in order to do it. And the way that I do that is, you know, I wake up in the morning and I say, thank you. And, you know, this morning I was tired. Mia got up at midnight and was up for 2 hours and I was up with her trying to get her back to sleep. And, you know, and I've got a big video shoot today for 5 hours. I've got bags under my eyes. I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't memorize my lines. I'm nervous about using a teleprompter. I'm like, and I'm thinking, okay, this morning I'm like, oh gosh, you know, I'm tired. Why today? And then I took a breath and then I saw my little reminder popped up. Thomas said, oh, you're on Victory Circles this morning. Don't forget. And I'm like, oh, Sherry, oh, yay. And then I'm like, oh, fun. I get to have tea with a sister. Oh, my God, that's good. And then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I'm back on the positive track. I'm back in that positivity and generating more of that. You know, okay, yeah, I'm tired. But you know what? I got a video shoot today with some of the best videographers in the world. Like, what am I complaining about? Like, am I going to get, you know, we get what we look for. If we're looking for the positive, we'll generate more of it. If we're looking for the negative, which so often we fall subconsciously, unconsciously into the habit of doing, we'll get more of that. So I do find that, you know, by plucking the positive moment out of your life, you generate more. And you know, this morning's a perfect example. I have no idea how much makeup I'm going to have to put on to look awake, but I'm now focused on how much fun I'm having with you, and that's going to carry into the video. And you know, I just have to have.
And that's why they invented concealer, right?
Oh, I don't know how much concealer I'm going to have. I said yesterday too. Oh no, I'll come makeup ready. I don't need any hair or makeup. And then I'm like, I woke up this morning and looked in the mirror and I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be really interesting. Who can I call? But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm so grateful to be here with you. I'm so grateful to have this amazing cup of gypsy love in my hand. I'm so grateful for the chance to talk to your listeners. Like, I mean, come on. At the end of the day, there is so much to be grateful for.
Absolutely.
And that's such
and I do
positive.
Think. Yeah, that we all get caught up in the minutia, that we stop looking at the greatness of what's around us, even in the little things. In the Victory Circles, this month we're looking at the Mastermind Principle of Self-Confidence. And along with it, we're also looking within our Mastermind groups at the sales process, right? That word sales. And it's one of the things that I loved envisioning in your book, the whole thing of you taking sage around with you as you were, you know, delving out your samples of tea, which it was just amazing. And can you share how you developed your sales process over time and some of your big ahas around that?
Yeah, you know, in my keynotes and with my, retreats, I basically have come to realize that sales is a real issue for many, many, many people. And what I found is, I'm going to use an example of yesterday. Sage had his interview at Villanova Prep here in Ojai. It's a prestigious high school, and he was so unbelievably nervous. It took everything in me not to, you know, leap across the table and hug him and comfort him in his nervousness in this interview. And the sister, there was a sister in there who basically is the freshman coach. And she said, you know, and Sage, she said, well, what about community service? You know, at Villanova, we're a Catholic school and community service is so important to us. And he says, well, I don't really do service. I'm sorry. I don't know. And I'm thinking, kid, you do, the tea company is service. Like, so I said, Sage, what about getting the computers to the kids in Sri Lanka in the tea fields through the Robin Hood laptop project? What about this? What about that? And she looked at me, you know, kind of sternly, and she said, it's very important for Sage to be able to talk about his accomplishments and about the things he can offer the world. And he needs to understand the difference between bragging and claiming his confidence and his accomplishments. And I thought, oh, my God, like that alone, like I want him in the school just so he can be coached by her, because that is what women – you know, when we're scared of selling, what are we scared of? Are we scared of seeming full of ourselves? Are we scared of being vulnerable and asking for the sale? Are we scared? What are we scared of? Examining that is important. But then one thing that I always, and I believe this in every cell in my body, is that if you have a mission to serve, you cannot fail. And if you are selling something you don't believe in that doesn't fully serve others, you'll never be comfortable selling. If you are selling something, I never sold a tin of tea in my life. I sold hope, and I sold the buyer's chance to help me end poverty for tea workers. And so as soon as I realized that you know, the tea came with the mission, all of a sudden I was unstoppable. I sold so much tea, and I never actually sold the tea itself. I sold a better life for tea workers. I sold an aspiration. I sold a mission. I said, won't you help me? So my advice for women is to go in and really look at their offering and really get their mission aligned with what they're doing. And I'm going to be teaching, actually, I'm going to be doing a virtual conference in June called Healing the World Through Business. And the basis of it is taking a mission and making it your product and fully aligning your purpose with your prosperity so that you can actually really delve deep and sell from the soul instead of feeling like you're selling from, you know, a place of selfishness.
Well, and I think that's where I see so many women stumble, especially women, is that whole thing, well, I'm being selfish as opposed to, you know, I'm giving this opportunity or this gift or this, however you want to look at it.
Well, so if a woman is feeling selfish, she needs to examine, like for me, I was selling tea at first because I needed to pay for Sage's medical care. And so for me, it was never, it wasn't selfish because my kid needed it. So, you know, women can come up with a workaround. So if a woman's having a hard time selling, then maybe she needs to tithe a portion of the sales to a cause. And then she's talking about that as well as the features. Mm. Because I'll tell you, there is nothing new under the sun. There was tea, oh my God, it's 5,000-6,000 years old. What was I going to offer different in tea? And I used to hear people say things like, what's different about your tea? What's different about, you know, why pick you over this other brand? And, you know, I got to the point where I could say, because my tea is ending poverty for tea workers worldwide, and it tastes good. So why don't you help me in this cause, in this mission, look at these pictures of these women in the tea field. They make $1.35 a day. They have to pluck 2,000 times a kilo. 8 to 16 kilos a day is their daily quota to make that $1.35 a day. Why would you pick a non-fair trade product over this product when this product is actually helping these women have a voice and get basic medical care? And I would show them the pictures, and I was awfully convincing because it was the truth. And it was a mission that people could join instead of just feeling like they were being sold to. And a mentor of mine used to say, you know, people don't want you to sell to them. They want to be sold on what you're selling. Like, they want to actually feel it in their being. Like, you know, why pick this tea over that tea? Because this tea is actually making a difference in people's lives 9,000 miles away, and I've seen proof of it. That's the kind of sales pitch you need, because it's no longer about you. If you're feeling selfish about your sales pitch, you are being selfish. So you need to figure out how to take the selfishness and turn it into service, and then you'll never sell again in your life. But all the sales will come to you. And that's, you know, there's a whole method behind it, you know, as far as like the A, B, and C, and, you know, we can always talk about that. But you know, take it out of you. And, you know, one thing that women don't realize is it's not about them. You know, we often think, oh, God, you know, it's about, like, I'm going to look selfish. I'm going to look this. And I used to go to these trade shows where I would see, like, the men, because there were, when I started the tea company, I was, I think, the only, you know, substantial, you know, bigger woman-owned tea company, and now there's more, thank God. But I would go to these trade shows, and the guys, these other competitors, would have like all these important buyers in their booth. They were so confident, their booth looked perfect, and they had all their worker bees around them. And then I'd look over at my booth, and my staff was like scrambling, and we were all disorganized, and people would walk by and not even notice, and I'd be like, "What am I doing?" And I noticed that the guys would ask for meetings before the shows. They would ask for things. They were confident in their asking. They were cool. And then when they would get, you know, people would come to their booth, they would, you know, jive with them, be relaxed. They had this sense of, you know, it wasn't, they kind of made it about the person, not them. So I think if women can say, okay, I've got a mission, I've got a purpose, it matters that I sell this product, and it matters to the person I'm selling it to, this is of service to them, then it takes the feeling of selfishness out, because you're no longer being selfish. Being self-conscious, like, at that level is selfish. So we have to get over ourselves and just get our, you know, get our work done, get our mission fulfilled.
Well, and it's that whole honesty piece. It was in your conversation on CNN TV that I was watching yesterday, that with Gay Hendricks, that about how you at first were keeping it under wraps that you were a single mom, and then once you started talking about it, it actually became an asset to your business.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, you know, I was really scared to expose myself and tell people that I really needed their help. You know, this was before I was even, I even understood the mission of fair trade fully. I even before I had gone to the tea field, but yeah, I was scared. I did not want anyone to know that my son needed, you know, daily, weekly, monthly medical care, and that I had him with me because, you know, underneath his clothes and his cute little smile, he had, you know, tubes and things like that. I really had this veneer of I've got it all together, because I thought that people would need to think I had it all together to trust me and my products. And I thought, you know, if anyone knows my real situation, they'll never drink my tea. I had this crazy belief around that. And then, you know, I had one woman, Sandy Campbell Springfield, she actually helped me with this too, is she discovered me at a trade show, and she said, you know, we're really interested in carrying your products at Safeway. And I was like, oh my God, Safeway, like that's a lot of stores, and how will I do this? And then, you know, one night I met with her, and we had dinner, and we were drinking wine, and, you know, add wine to any meeting, and all of a sudden it's a truth serum, at least for me. And then I'm like, well, what's really happening is, and I just told her, and it was like, holy cow. She said, you know, I had, you know, I was a single mom. I had lots of, you know, I had my children. I, you know, was the first grocery store manager in the U.S. The men I had to work with were telling me things like women should be, you know, tied to the bed with enough rope to get to the stove and back. She said, I was up against the world. And all of a sudden it was like we had this connection of, you know what, we're not selling tea, we're not buying groceries, we're helping women. And all of a sudden that shifted everything. Because, you know, it turned out that the buyer at Safeway, you know, the big buyer who ended up being a huge angel in my life, she was a single mom with four kids, and she had gone through hell. And all of a sudden, we could connect at a heart level that was not about business. It was about heart. And through that, I realized there is no separation between business and life. You know, that term, it's just business. If you want to see me come unglued, say that to me. That's where my meditation practice, you know, doesn't work. I gotta get to the point where that doesn't bug me, because you know what? It is not just business. This is your life. You chose to do business to make a livelihood, you know, making sure it's aligned with your heart and your vocation and your family and all that. It's critical. And so showing that vulnerability, telling the truth, it actually built trust. And, you know, it enabled them to roll up their sleeves and help me. I got certified as a woman-owned business, which helped me get out of slotting fees. Because to get into Safeway is, you know, you could spend $1 million buying that shelf space. I never knew you had to buy shelf space, by the way. But with a women-owned certificate, I qualified under the diversity, business diversity clause, you know, that Safeway they needed, and a certain amount of minority and women-owned companies get a chance to play with the big boys. And I was able to get into all these stores with that. Had I not opened up my heart and told the truth and showed my vulnerability to those women, I would never have even known about that certificate, and I would never even have been able to get into those stores. So those are the moments, those are the openings I was talking about earlier that Gay and Katie talk about. That opening was right there. And the fact that I walked through the opening and I was conscious enough to know that it was safe to walk through, that was, you know, another major turning point in my company.
Fantastic. And, it really brings home, too. I was just reading an article from Inc. magazine, and they talked about the greatest salespeople. And one of the traits is that you don't put your customer at another level, either lower than you or higher than you. If they're not at an even level that you can have that kind of a relationship, then you're not going to get the sales momentum that you need, and that just really follows in suit with that so
you know,
much.
And they're my friends to this day. You know, I know that if I picked up the phone and called any of them, you know, we could have a conversation about life. And that, to me, I value so deeply the relationships I build. I mean, you're in Denver, right?
Right. So
Dan Sims at King Super, I mean, I could just burst out in tears with how much I cherish my friendship with Dan Sims, who's the buyer at King Super. I mean, these people are valuable in so many levels. They're not just the gatekeepers to the shelf space or to the client. They are soulful people that are out in the world, you know, working and making a difference and seeing opportunity and you know, they care about their customers. I mean, that is, you get past that level of saying, oh, Mr. Buyer, you're so important. Oh, my God, you know, I'm so you know, starstruck to wow, look at what you're doing in the world. How can I help? That goes a very long ways. And then guess what? You get friendship to boot. I mean, I can count some of my dearest friends, Matt G at Cost Plus World Market and Bed Bath & Beyond. I mean, Matt has known me since before I even had tins of, you know, I was still selling, you know, loose leaf bulk. And, you know, these people are very valuable people in my life that I hope I'll be friends with forever, way past the selling process, way past it.
That's fantastic. And it's just such a... not only allowing us into your head like this morning, Zena, but just really the hope that it brings to others of how simplistic it can be when you stop and look at how to run a business that makes you feel good every day.
Yeah, that's the key you just said, Sherry, that makes you feel good every day.
Every day.
That's the key.
Yeah. The name, as you know, of our organization is the Victory Circles, and at the end of the day, what does Zena's Victory Circle look like that really, that you know you've done what you needed to do?
I don't think that my Victory Circle looks like a party. It looks like all the people that have helped, all the people that are helping. I mean, my team at Zena TV, Donna Araganti, my art director, and Andre, my developer, the architect, Thomas, who was with me at the tea company and now is with me at Zena TV. You know, my husband, Gerard, my girlfriends and my New Moon Mastermind, we get together every new moon and you know, grow our dreams. I Katie Hendricks, one of my greatest mentors, and all the women that are on Zena TV right now. I just, my Victory Circle includes just all the people that I love in my life who have helped support me. And, you know, I do believe self-made is an enormous myth. I believe that self-made, you know, is like, it's almost like the term, it's just business. There's no such thing as self-made. There's no such thing as it's just business. I think the tribe and the collaboration and, you know, the energy and love of others is really what my Victory Circle looks like. It looks like a gathering of people enjoying one another's company and efforts. And that's, I think, I can grow that into my global tribe, the tea workers, Paul Rice, the head of Fairtrade USA, all the people who are working so hard for their families and for, you know, to produce something good in the world. My Victory Circle is one hella big party of all of my friends and colleagues. So
I love it. I love it. So our time is over, unfortunately.
Are you serious? Has it been an hour?
Time flies when you're having fun.
I don't
time.
Think you got a word in edgewise. This is on two cups
that
of
is...
tea, not just one.
Oh, that's right. We'll have to have that second cup here soon.
Sherry, thank you.
Thank you so much. And I, so Zena TV, I want to make sure that all of our listeners know, tell us a little bit more about that and your hopes for that moving forward.
Okay. Well, it's a new dream. I went from tea to TV, and I want to showcase women in business and women making an impact in the world through either business and art. And I don't know. I just have a vision. I don't know how I'm going to do it yet, but I started by soft launching the TV site with a few videos, and I'm going to be putting out a video hopefully every week. Don't hold me to it because, you know, life does happen, but it's a place where women can get resources and, you know, we're looking for blogger contributors. I'd love to, you know, have some of your awesome blogs, you know, repurposed on there. Sherry, I always read yours. And, you know, I just want it to be a place where women can find comfort and know that they have a tribe. I'm starting a thing called the Sip Sisterhood where we can get together and sip tea virtually or in person once a week. And I'll be doing that online. But it's basically a place I need online, so I'm creating it as I go. So they can go to www.zenatv.com, or wait, no, it's zena.tv. That's the difference.
Right.
And and they can sign up for an excerpt of my book, and that will put them into the newsletter, which, you know, sooner or later we'll get going, but basically I'm going to just have videos and uplifting content for women entrepreneurs and a really cool shop. The shop is going to 10% of proceeds. It's going to go to one of 5 charities dedicated to women and girls and consciousness and education. And so every purchase they make will have, they'll get to choose which charity they want to donate to. And they're going to have goddess necklaces, which are in the book. And there's going to be how-to videos and guides and all sorts and stationery. I have local artisans making those and book bags and accessories. It's going to be very, very fun. We're collecting all women artisans right now. Jess Meharry is making custom jewelry for it as well. She's the designer for Sundance Catalog. So it's going to be pretty spectacular. So thank you for letting me pitch that.
You bet. Thank you for the work that you do in the world. It's awesome. I thank you, and we will hopefully have a conversation and another cup of tea in the not-too-distant future.
Anytime,
awesome. And I'll leave everybody this morning. You know, Zena, one other thing, too, your book was chock full of amazing famous quotes, and you know I love famous quotes. And I picked the closing quote for this morning. One of my favorites was this one that you have in there from Buddha, and it is, "The secret of health for both mind and body is not to mourn for the past nor to worry about the future, but to live the present moment wisely and earnestly." Beautiful.
Hallelujah.
So I wish everybody an amazing week ahead, full of creating your own abundance, prosperity, and, of course, all those little victories along the way. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks again, Zena. Take care. Bye-bye.